Dad's Couch Potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about Godzilla vs. Kong, The Unholy, French Exit, Made for Love, and Creepshow Season 2. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Wonder Woman 1984. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Apparently, Netflix is trying to strike a deal with Rian Johnson, not necessarily with Daniel Craig, but with Daniel Craig's character that he played in Knives Out. And the money is supposed to be upwards of over $400 million to do two sequels to Knives Out with the character of Benoit Blanc, who was played by Daniel Craig. And the first thing anyone saw that, they're just like, holy, $400 million? That is an insane amount for this movie. Because if you look at the box office, the movie itself cost like $40 million or so. It had a big cast, but it was still a $40 million movie. It was, in essence, taking place mostly in one location. They went out of the location. Now, it had a big cast, like, you know, it had like Chris Evans, and it had Jamie Lee Curtis, and it had Don Johnson, and it had Toni Collette. So there were some respectable actors in there. But, I mean, it didn't have, like, Tom Cruise in it or anything like that. But it did have Daniel Craig. And a lot of people were sort of, like, floored that they would spend that much money. But I think a lot of it is the money is not just to put two $200 million sequels out there. It's a rights purchase. It's a purchase for the rights. They probably are going to get the exclusive rights to stream the original Knives Out. And they're looking, in terms of developing those movies, that's the streaming rights, and it's probably also the rights to the characters. One of the things that Netflix has done is it has curated certain audiences. It has an audience for teens. I talked about that the other week when I was talking about The Irregulars. It has an audience for anime fans. It has an audience for foreign language. There's a large number of Spanish language programming on Netflix. They've also curated a strong British contingency of their shows. They have stuff like Derek, and they have stuff like Broadchurch, and they have a whole bunch of things that are from the BBC that they've imported that they call a Netflix original, even though Netflix didn't produce it. It was a BBC production. One of the things that British audiences and American audiences who like British programming gravitate towards is not just police procedurals, but mysteries. There's a rich history of mysteries in the BBC. Everything from Agatha Christie with Poirot and Miss Marple to more modern stuff like Midsummer Murders. And while you can get a lot of that stuff through BritBox on Amazon, I think they want to make their own, eventually, a series, either a series itself that has like 14 episodes that they're going to drop all at once, or they're going to do it like Columbo and just keep having these movies where it's a new mystery every so many months with this character. And will Daniel Craig play it? Who knows? He has this history of sort of turning his nose up after playing a role too many times. But that's an interesting new step that Netflix is going for in terms of keeping their market share. And that dovetails into the next story, which is about Zack Snyder's Justice League. And was it a hit or not? Now, ultimately, I think no matter how you cut it, this was a bona fide hit. I think no matter how you cut it, it was worth the extra money that Warner Brothers put into this, the $70 million in any reshoots and finishing the music and finishing the effects. It was worth it for that because it gave them something to release in the middle of March. And one of the things that people have pointed out is the key to these streaming services isn't necessarily the number of people who watch a program. It's retention of the subscribers. One of the things that Disney Plus faced last year when they dropped Hamilton, there was this huge uptick of new subscribers to Disney Plus. but they ended up losing something like 30-some percent, almost half. I mean, it was like 39% or 41% of loss of subscribers, people who canceled after that first month. What you want is you want people to sign up and stay on. And even though Warner Brothers haven't been having a ton of signups initially for HBO Max, I think partly because of the price compared to Disney Plus, putting all of their theatrical features like the Zack Snyder's Justice League cut, which is actually exclusively to HBO Max, but Godzilla versus Kong and Wonder Woman 1984, and you got Dune coming up and the Suicide Squad, that helps retention. And even though you had a lot of signups for Justice League, and there's some data that suggests that not everybody who watched the Justice League even finished it. There's some data I've seen that half the people who started it didn't actually finish watching the Justice League. They signed up and they're keeping the account at least until they're not delivering the content. And that's the other reason why Disney is being so aggressive in bringing out new content, so they can keep people subscribed, because then that's a cash cow. And it's less targeting a single film, but saying we now have exclusive content that you can watch, and it's worth for HBO Max the $15 a month. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to jump into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is actually also from Netflix, and that is Things Heard and Seen, starring Amanda Seyfried, which debuts on April 29th.
I'm new in town, and I would love to learn more about the older homes in the area. I don't know anybody up here.
Well, you do now.
My wife doesn't know what happened here. I think it would be better if we kept it that way.
Everything in the natural world has a counterpart in the spiritual realm.
We're all so inconsequential.
I say death is only the beginning.
I think this looks interesting. I like Amanda Seyfried. I think she's a versatile, good actor. There's a subgenre of these haunting type movies where it's somebody in the house, usually a housewife, but you know, sometimes not. We saw this with His House. It was a different version of that, where this person at home is dealing with a potential haunting. And this looks like it might be an interesting little thriller. I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to this halfway to Halloween celebration that seems to be going on, and I'll talk more about that in a later segment when we talk about Creepshow. The next movie I want to talk about with a trailer is Wrath of Man, which opens in theaters on May 7th.
Border Coast Security specializes in cash trucks across L.A.
Do you have any idea how dangerous this job can be?
Some idea, yeah. We ain't the predators. With a prey.
It's like he wants trucks to get hit. He's not a cop. But if he's not a cop, what is he?
A while back, we lost two guards, a civilian too.
About my son?
He didn't make it.
I need to know who killed my son.
This stars Jason Statham as a guy who works with armored car deliveries and is basically trying to find people who are stealing armored cars because he wants revenge on the people who killed his son. It looks like it's a basic, good old-fashioned Jason Statham action movie. Now, it's directed by Guy Ritchie. And I like to see Guy Ritchie going back to his just run-and-gun kind of movies. You know, something like The Gentleman was an interesting movie, but it was almost overly complex for Guy Ritchie because he gets kind of caught up in the spiraling around twists and the turns and the double crossing. This looks a little more straightforward. And in that sense, I really kind of want to see it, because I think that's kind of going back to Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, to some of his earlier stuff, even something like Rock and Rolla with Gerard Butler. This looks like it's that hit 'em hard, hit 'em fast, but don't overly complicate the plot. Now, you notice I don't have the Suicide Squad in there, and I think it looks great. I do want to say the Suicide Squad looks amazing, but I'm going to wait until there's a little more coherent of a trailer before I spotlight that. Anyways, that's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about French Exit and Made for Love. Hit the sky fall and it crumbles.
Thank you.
Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about one that's been around for a while but is going wide this weekend, and that is French Exit. Michelle Pfeiffer stars as an aging widow who travels to Paris with her withdrawn son to celebrate the end of her life and fortune.
It's all gone. Every penny. What was your plan?
My plan was to die before the money ran out, but I kept and keep not dying, and here I am.
The hens are clucking.
Are they saying I'm broke?
They are.
What about my apartment in Paris?
It's just sitting empty.
I've never been so hurt as when I saw your face for the first time.
Why?
Because you were me.
I have a confession to make. It has been months since I've seen this movie. I got a screener for it sometime in November or December. It was, I know I took a vacation at the end of December, but I remember getting it in the middle of that awards push pre-Christmas. And of course, they were pushing this. They were promoting it to get a possible Oscar nomination for Michelle Pfeiffer. And she does a great job in this movie. Don't get me wrong. There's no problem with Michelle Pfeiffer in this film. But it is one of those movies, and I've talked about films like this, where it exists for no other reason than to try to get her an Oscar nomination. And while that stuff works occasionally, I think the movie A Simple Man, which was Colin Firth's, that existed for no other reason than to get him an Oscar. And those movies work now and then, but I tend to think that they generally backfire when they're just so focused on one person and his or her performance. And I think that's the Achilles heel to this movie, is it seems to exist for no other reason than award bait for Michelle Pfeiffer, as good as she does in the movie. It's a very understated movie. It's a very dry movie. And I, like I said, I saw it months ago, so I actually didn't go back and rewatch it yet, even though I've got a screener of it. I didn't have time. My apologies. I was too busy watching Godzilla vs. Kong for the second time to go back and watch this one again. But I got out what I wanted to get out of it. I mean, it's a good performance. Lucas Hodge plays her son, and he plays a very similar character to the one he played in, what was that one, Let Them All Talk, with Meryl Streep taking the cruise as a writer. It's almost like they lifted the, I mean, he looks exactly the same. He's got the same wardrobe. He's got the same haircut. And almost the same type of character, and it looks like they lifted him from that movie and put him in this one. I think seeing those two movies together made me appreciate it less, for sure. But it's this weird sort of dark, acerbic comedy of her kind of just flopping around Paris, trying to spend her money and hoping that she's going to die soon. And it's her running into these bizarre people. And it's her being this outspoken, does whatever she wants to, this brash American who's sort of flipping tables over in Paris because she does what she wants to do. And you run into some very interesting characters and some good performances. But still, ultimately, it's, like I said, it's a spotlight on her acting, which is fantastic, but not much more than that. So I'm going to have to say I was a little disappointed in French Exit. As good as the performance is, I felt the movie was unimportant and didn't need to be there. So I'm going to have to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next program. And I say program because it's not a movie. It is a TV series. It is called Made for Love, and you can find it on HBO Max. It dropped this week on April 1st. And it stars Kristen Milioti as a young woman trapped in a relationship with a reclusive tech billionaire who escapes only to find he has implemented a computer chip in her brain.
Google Tech's newest endeavor is a chip implanted into couples' brains to merge their thoughts.
Hazel and I are users one.
Our minds will be one.
Technology has improved the way we live. Why not improve the way we love?
Together, we will become a singular living God.
I want it out, and I want a divorce.
I was reviewing this movie on the radio with a host, and he pointed out how similar it is to some of the stuff you see in Black Mirror. And that's true. It's clearly influenced by Black Mirror with the sort of the implanting chips and the virtual reality and the augmented reality. And in general, I found that there's more and more of this content being made. And I'm okay with that. Because one of the things that these streaming services allow is it allows for some very niche content. And Black Mirror is a great example. I mean, that's British, but it's again brought in by Netflix, and I was just talking about that. But the thing with having one of these streaming services, they allow them to explore what I would call speculative fiction. It's not just science fiction, it's speculative fiction. And speculative fiction is more immediate future of what technology or science elements can do to the human experience. Oftentimes, not a good thing. And Black Mirror is a great example of that. All their stuff is in the not too distant future with technology that might be possible but isn't available yet. And a lot of it's a cautionary tale. And that's absolutely what Made for Love is doing. And this is not the first time we've seen this. I'm not just mentioning Black Mirror, but there's stuff like, there's that TV series Upload on Amazon about somebody uploading their consciousness after they die. There's these speculative fiction found on a bunch of different services. You know, Apple TV has some science fiction-y stuff that just kind of bends reality a bit. This is what this one does, is it questions what does it mean? And it questions real questions, because I don't know how far we are of putting chips in people's brains to not mind control, I'm not acting like I'm a QAnon conspiracy theorist, but to say that at a certain point, this may be possible. I mean, we're talking about the realization of Philip K. Dick's ideas from way back in the last century, but now we're getting closer and closer to it. You know, would they develop a chip? Could they develop a chip in animals, and how long until we put that into practice with humans? It also shows the deep character of a woman who has a troubled past, but you know, it's her being controlled by a man, being this billionaire, that she sort of stumbles into the marriage. And while they appear to have a great relationship, that's not what she wants. And it does deal with consent, and it does deal with, you know, an interesting look at what life could be in a post-Me Too movement. And the movie starts with her escaping. So you know she's trying to get out, and there's something in the innate that she doesn't like about their relationship, and a lot of it's told in flashback. Now, right now, 3 episodes are available on HBO Max, and I believe then beyond this, they're going to drop one a week. They're 25 to 30 minutes long, so they're short, and it has some weird humor to it. It can be at times very, very dark, but also weirdly whimsical. There's also a scene in there, and I think it's in the 4th episode, so you can't see it yet. But there's a scene in there where somebody's wearing a Cedar Point shirt, and I'm like, woohoo, Cedar Point. That's an amusement park up in Ohio. It was for the Demon Drop, which is a roller coaster that doesn't exist anymore, and it was kind of lame, but it was nice to see a little bit of Ohio connection there. But anyways, I found this to be a fascinating show, doing something that is contemplating life in the future with technology. And it's not just Black Mirror that can do this stuff effectively. But it does it in a comedic way, which softens the really dark, edgy elements to it. And that's why a show like this works. So I'm going to have to say that Made for Love kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Godzilla versus Kong and the Unholy.
King Kong, you know the name of King Kong, you know the fame of King Kong.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about the big one for this week that's actually already out. And that is Godzilla versus Kong. Humans mess things up again when they try to move Kong to a new habitat, attracting Godzilla to battle him for dominance over the world.
We need Kong. The world needs him to stop what's coming.
It's Godzilla.
These are dangerous times.
Godzilla's out there and he's hurting people, and we don't know why.
There's something provoking him that we're not seeing here.
I'm of the same opinion.
This actually released on Wednesday, which was March 31st, and it released on HBO Max and in theaters at the same time. Now, I'm going to say this before I even really talk about the movie. if you feel comfortable going to the theater, try and see it on a big screen. See it in IMAX if you would. I almost want to go see this in IMAX. I've seen it on my at home. I haven't been to the theater yet. Although it looks like in April I might be going back to the movie theater. I'm going to be fully vaccinated in April, so I'm hoping to start my sojourn back into the movie theaters. But if you're going to have to watch it at home, that's great, but put it on the big TV. Do not watch this on your phone. These movies are not made to be watched on your phone. I can respect watching it at home on a big flat screen TV. Yeah, gosh, especially if you've got one of those 70, 80, 100-inch television behemoths. Yeah, that might look really cool there, but do not watch it on your phone. Do not watch it on a small iPad. This is a kaiju movie. Kaiju is the giant Japanese monsters, or really any monster, since it's a Japanese word for them. So this is what a lot of people have been waiting for. It's a sequel to Kong Skull Island and Godzilla King of the Monsters, which came out in 2019. It follows the same trajectory. It follows some of the same characters. You've got Millie Bobby Brown back. You've got Kyle Chandler back as her father in a much smaller role. Now, if you remember Skull Island, that thing took place in the 70s. That was a Vietnam allegory. And I thought that actually had a lot of depth of character because it had King Kong. You have to understand King Kong and Godzilla, while they're both large monsters, they come culturally from two totally different places. King Kong is an American creation. Godzilla is a Japanese creation. And they do their best to sort of preserve their cultural heritage, because King Kong is an ape. He's basically a gigantic gorilla. So they have this thing in there where you got Rebecca Hall playing this woman who studies him, and there's this young girl who uses sign language to communicate with Kong. Godzilla communicates very differently. He's a lizard, and he comes from that Japanese perspective of what can be a monster can be flipped over and can also be a hero. And they put these two together, and the story is that they've got these kaijus. There's only one mega apex predator can be in charge, and everything else has to submit. And Kong was protected on Skull Island, but he's been moved, and they deal with all these other kind of junk science that they have in there, which I'm fine with, because it's a movie about giant monsters. You can have junk science with a hollow earth and that sort of stuff in there, and I don't mind it. Ultimately, the reason to see this movie is for the SmackDown. Godzilla vs. Kong, a lot of fun to watch. It is a massive smash, quite literally and figuratively. And I know people will say, well, how can you complain about Man of Steel wrecking Metropolis and not have a problem with this movie? Well, that's a Godzilla movie. Godzilla's always fighting in the middle of a big city, and he's not meaning to destroy things. It's just, that's where it happens to be. And I don't understand. The humans are really the bad guys in this movie when you really look at it, because they're the ones who keep putting these kaiju in the way of regular innocent humans. Like one of the things one of the places that they attack is Hong Kong, because there's this facility there. Why did they build this facility in the middle of a major city? Why didn't they build it out in the desert so that when somebody comes to attack them, they're not wiping out hundreds of thousands of people in the same process? I had fun with this movie. The human character is a little underdeveloped, but you expect that with a Godzilla movie. I mean, heck, I've seen more than my fair share of Godzilla movies, especially the ones from the 70s that were really kind of cheesy and corny, and a lot of them ended up on Mystery Science Theater. But I went back and rewatched the original Godzilla. Well, not the original Godzilla, but the Godzilla from 2014. And if you watch Godzilla and then Godzilla King of the Monsters and then Godzilla vs. Kong, the three Godzilla movies they've made over the past seven or eight years, they actually work as a trilogy. You know, one of my biggest problems with Godzilla from 2014 is there was very little Godzilla. They kept cutting away from Godzilla to tell this human story that I thought was kind of banal and stupid and understated. But if you treat this as a first act, it actually works, because then you get the smackdowns between Ghidorah and Rodan and Mothra in the second movie, and then this one culminates between the one-on-one with Godzilla versus Kong. And that's the reason to see the movie. It's a whole heck of a lot of fun. It's a Godzilla movie. It's a kaiju movie. Do not expect high art, but expect some great special effects and some great SmackDown monster action. So I'm going to have to say Godzilla vs. Kong is a lot of fun. It totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next movie that's opening big this weekend, and that is The Unholy. Jeffrey Dean Morgan stars as an ethically compromised journalist who discovers an apparent miracle in a small parish in Massachusetts, only to wonder if there might be an evil force behind it.
A girl performing miracles after a visitation from the Virgin Mary.
All right, I think I got this all set up. What do you say we do a couple real easy questions?
How many are going to watch? Mary wants to reach as many people as possible.
Maybe millions.
You think there could be other forces at play here?
When God builds a church, the devil builds a chapel next door.
Don't doubt her.
This was one that was, I believe the production was shut down during the pandemic, and they finally got it finished, and they released just last month the release date. They said, we're going to release this on Holy Weekend. You know, this is Easter weekend. So instead of getting The Passion of the Christ, you're getting a religious horror movie. Now, that may seem a little odd to people, but, you know, look, my grandmother was raised Catholic. She was a very pious Catholic. And when The Exorcist came out, it was supported, and you were told as a good Catholic to go see it, because even though it had this evil horror movie connotation, it put the Catholic Church in a very good light. And one of the things I find so funny about Hollywood is very secular. I mean, you go back, you know, pre-Hays Code, and it was very Christian conservative, especially in the 40s and the 50s and even into the 60s to a degree. But now it's very secular until there's a movie about an exorcism or possession, and then everyone finds Jesus. And that's essentially what happens in this movie. But look, you got to look at it as a horror movie for what it is. There's independent horror, which is very edgy and extreme and usually can be R-rated or more. This is not that. This is studio horror. And yeah, you get the authentic studio horror that people like The Conjuring. And then there's ones that people oftentimes malign, which are the PG-13 paint-by-numbers studio horror. But when it comes to a PG-13 paint-by-numbers studio picture, I actually kind of like this. I thought it was effective in what it did. And I thought it dealt with some interesting concepts and ideas of just because something appears to be a miracle and just because something appears to be benevolent does not necessarily mean that's the case. And yeah, it has a lot of imagery we've seen before, but when it comes down to it, it's effectively done. And it works for a religious movie and as a horror movie at the same time. I mean, it's not the Ten Commandments, although the Ten Commandments did come out in 4K this week. But this one has at least a certain degree of theology behind it, even though it still is a paint-by-numbers studio picture. But overall, I mean, Jeffrey Dean Morgan kind of carries the movie on his shoulders. I think he does a great job. And there's some other good performances. Carrie Elwes as a priest. It's a throwaway slumber party horror, but I think it works. I enjoyed it. I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Creepshow Season 2 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Wonder Woman 1984. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the final movie review. Well, not a movie review, it's a show, and it is on Shudder. One of the things Shudder has been doing is they have launched what they're calling Halfway to Halloween, because we have just hit April, and that is the fourth month, which means it's 6 months from October. So we're halfway to Halloween season. And when we're still coming out of a pandemic, and while we still are going to be having somewhat restrictive abilities to have fun in the normal season, it's nice to have a little bit of, fun and enjoyment if you're a horror movie fan. I've got a friend who just decorated his apartment. He got a new apartment, and he's decorated it as Halloween every day. And he's got, like, Nightmare on Elm Street stuff and posters and memorabilia and all this kind of stuff. And look, if that's what makes you happy, I don't care if it's April, do it. do whatever you have to do to enjoy yourself and get through this time. And that's one of the things that Shudder's doing. They're sort of embracing the Christmas in July, but is in a horror movie setting. And one of the things they've done is they have released Creepshow Season 2, which is obviously the second season to Creepshow, which is based on the George Romero movie from 1982. Shudder's original anthology horror series returns with more short stories dedicated to the tongue-in-cheek material from Stephen King's 1980s past.
Thank you for coming.
I already know that your services are in great demand. You come very highly recommended.
Today's guest has brought us something quite special.
People like horror. People like being scared.
Let's look inside.
Now, I mentioned Stephen King in there. You don't hear him at all in there because he's not associated with it, but Stephen King wrote the original Creepshow. George A. Romero directed the original Creepshow. And it was the kind of movie that I died to go see. I just so wanted to see. In 1982, I was like 10 or 11, and my mom begrudgingly took me. And of course, as all the blood splattering in the movie, she's like, why did I take my child to this? And I'm loving every minute of it. So I'm a big fan of anthology horror anyways. I mean, I like the old TV series like Twilight Zone, which bleeds into science fiction, or, something like, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, even the syndicated stuff from the 80s and 90s, stuff like Monsters and Tales from the Dark Side. And I love anthology movies. I've always loved the Amicus productions as well. And Creepshow played off of the old EC horror comics, which my dad still has several copies of those. So the originals, like the original printings, they're not in great condition, but he's got some of the original EC horror comics, which is what made Tales from the Crypt, which was of course, they made a TV show based on that by HBO back in the 90s. Now, Creepshow, it has a certain flavor. It's not hardcore horror. It's tongue-in-cheek. It's sometimes funny. It's sometimes silly. This new season has a couple nods to some classics. It has a nod to Sam Raimi and The Evil Dead. There's a spinoff of that. It has a nod to even They're Creeping Up on You, which was an original Creepshow short in the original movie with E.G. Marshall being attacked by cockroaches. And this one, it's got a segment about a guy who's an exterminator, which also nods a little bit to Arachnophobia with John Goodman's character in Arachnophobia. They've got some interesting characters and actors that have been in stuff before. Like they've got Ashley Lawrence from the Hellraiser movies. It's great to see her showing up in something as well. So it's not meant to be taken overly seriously, but it's also got a certain level of contemporary elements to it. In particular, it has one episode that deals with somebody who's podcasting about murder and serial killers, which is a very popular thing right now. So they're not the greatest stories. I mean, they're predictable, but that's kind of the point. They're a little bit pulpy and a little bit cheesy, and that's what makes them work. And so I liked this new season, or at least what I've seen of it. I've seen the first two full episodes, which is four stories, of Creepshow Season 2 for Halfway to Halloween Celebration on Shudder. I'm going to have to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Wonder Woman 1984, which is out on DVD and Blu-ray this week. It's been out digitally for months in different forms. Of course, it came out famously at Christmas in theaters and on HBO Max. HBO Max runs those theatrical releases for 31 days and it drops off the service. You could have gotten it on digital recently, but if you want the physical disc, which I'm still a big fan of, the physical media is available now. Let's just talk about the movie really quick. I'll play a trailer, and then we'll talk also about some of the special features on the disc. In Wonder Woman 1984, Diana uses her powers to fight a new threat of a man who can grant any wish with certain consequences attached.
Welcome to the future. Life is good, but it can be better. And why shouldn't it be? All you need is to want it. Think about finally having everything you always wanted.
I can save today, but you can save the world.
Steve.
Diane.
This got much maligned over Christmas. A lot of people are like, this is the worst DC movie ever. And it's not. I mean, I think we can reserve that for Suicide Squad, the first one. But this is not terrible. Part of the problem that this movie faced is it deals with some magical ideas. This guy can grant these wishes, and it goes really big with it, kind of to its own detriment. If it had tried to rein in the ability to grant these wishes, or at least delivered it in a different way. I mean, Pedro Pascal plays a great reluctant villain. He's not the reluctant hero. He's the reluctant villain. He kind of falls into it. He's just this somewhat of an idiot who gets his own ability to do something. And he's not malicious in it, but he's like what I think real villains can end up being. Somebody who has an ability to do something, but doesn't want to let go of it without realizing the danger and the problems that it possesses. It does get a little goofy and it gets a little silly. It has Kristen Wiig as the cheetah. For about half the movie, Kristen Wiig's quite good in it. It's when they give her the full realization of the cheetah that, and I blame this more on the special effects, they go a little bit too, well, basically we end up with the first version of Sonic the Hedgehog without the redesigned Sonic the Hedgehog. And so you end up with a weird, uncanny valley version of the cheetah in full realization that doesn't match the comics. If you look at like the Marvel Universe, it's not the science fiction stuff. You know, Superman and Batman are science fiction, but like how WandaVision and Doctor Strange in the Marvel Universe and Thor are more magical, Wonder Woman falls in that. She's an immortal being that comes from gods. And she's a demigod, essentially. So yeah, it's going to be a little bit higher concept and it's not as grounded. I loved the look of the film. I loved the design of the film. I loved the excess of the 80s that we got with this. I thought that, yeah, I've heard the complaints that Diana is a little bit too hitched on having a boyfriend, but I don't think she's defined by that. I think she just misses somebody, and she's been missing Steve Trevor, and she longs for that. When he comes back, it gives her a chance to fulfill things that she didn't get a chance to fulfill, even though she's still an independent woman and she's able to survive without him and be the hero without him. There's nothing wrong with wanting that. So ultimately, I enjoyed Wonder Woman. I mean, I think it's a very different movie from the first one that came out in 2017. But it's a fun movie, and it's got a lot of fun action. And if you can get past the goofiness, it works. I enjoyed rewatching it, and it doesn't feel like it's a 2.5-hour movie, even though it is. Now, when it comes to the special features, and this is one of the reasons either to get the DVD, and I know you can get the special features online, but they have a handful of behind-the-scenes stuff, and they talk about some of the action breakdowns of some of the bigger action set pieces and some of the making of it and dealing with the 80s. The thing that really catches my eye in this one, and while they try to make it look like it's a big fun time on set and you know, got Gal Gadot goofing around with Kristen Wiig, which is fun, but I think they're pushing that as kind of like, hey, it's a girlfriend film. The thing that I think is just adorable as all get out is the focus on the little girl who plays Diana as a child. I mean, they play her original audition and it is the most adorable thing you will ever see. And that to me was one of the best little side things. It was just a spotlight on this girl who's enjoying the heck out of doing it and not even realizing how massive of a movie I think she's in. And she's going to look back on it and be like, wow, that was kind of a big deal when I was a kid. But overall, I got to say, I liked Wonder Woman 1984. I thought it was fun. It's got some good special features and it looks great. So I'm going to say that it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also available this week are Another Round and then some vintage releases of The Bad News Bears, Defending Your Life, and Secret and Lies on Criterion. And then the Ten Commandments in 4K if you want something for your Easter Sunday viewing. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Voyagers and Thunder Force. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.